X29 Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Metters.
X29 believes deeply in the benefit and importance of relational connection and contextualized training. And to this end, we place all of our lead pastors in a coaching cohort. These are led by other X29 pastors, and they provide opportunity for fellowship with other pastors in similar stage churches for mutual encouragement and learning. And this is why Chris Lewis joins me on the podcast today to discuss X29 cohorts. Chris is the lead pastor of Foothill Church, which is an X29 church in Glendora, California. Chris practiced law for 4 years before God led him into ministry. He's a graduate of DTS, which is Dallas Theological Seminary, and has served at Foothill Church since 2006. Well, Chris, welcome to the X29 podcast.
Thanks. Yeah, good to be here.
Well, brother, why don't you tell us just a little bit about your background and what, you know, is so commonly said, but so gloriously true, the kind of gloriously boring, but also gloriously exciting, wonderful story of how you became a Christian.
So I'm married to Michelle. We've been married for 32 years. I have 4 kids, ages, what are they now, 26 down to 19. And okay. So we're kind of empty nesters at this point, sort of new for us. I had the incredible privilege of growing up in a Christian home. And at a very young age, hearing the gospel and understanding my need for Jesus. And I can literally remember the day I was out in front of my house. I think I was 4 or 5 years old, and a motorcycle, it's a strange story, a motorcycle literally zoomed by, and it came really close to me. And honestly, looking back, maybe it wasn't that close, but it scared me enough that I can literally remember thinking, what would have happened if I would have died in terms of my eternity? That's a strange thing, I think, for a 4 or 5-year-old to be thinking. So I ran in crying to my mom, and I'm like, Mom, and she literally knelt down at the couch with me in our living room and led me to Christ. Wow. And that's the day that I look back and say, Jesus saved me when I was 4 or 5 years old. And so in that respect, it is. It's not one of those, boy, I was saved from this horrific life. The Lord has kept me and preserved me, and I feel I think the longer I pastor, Jeff, the more I realize what an incredible leg up, I guess, and privilege I've been given by growing up with a Christian heritage that wasn't just my parents, but my grandparents and great grandparents, and I'm so grateful for that. So yeah, that's kind of where I come from.
Man, hallelujah! I don't know who said it first, so I just take it. And so Listeners, you can just take it. I don't know who said this first, but with these kind of, childhood conversion stories, this guy said, the Lord saved me from sex, drugs, and rock and roll at 4 years old.
And precisely.
Yeah. Well, Chris, you did graduate from law school, and I know you also taught English in China before starting out in pastoral ministry. So these are interesting pathways. You've got a motorcycle conversion moment,
right?
Law school. Teaching English in China, and then becoming a pastor there in California. So how did God call you and bring you to pastoral ministry?
Yeah, certainly, again, it wasn't one of those, at a youth camp when I was 13, the Lord called me to ministry and I resisted it. I truly did not feel any call to the ministry that I guess we would identify in that way until I was, 32 years old. I was practicing law. Law is what I always wanted to do. It's also strange. I literally wanted to be a lawyer since the time I was in junior high. Wow. And so I planned my entire trajectory as I went through school to get to law school, graduate from law school. Really felt like that's what I was going to do. My major in college was because I wanted to go to law school. And so I did it. I'm doing what I want to do. And it was out of that. I grew up, Jeff, Assembly of God, so in a Pentecostal background, and there's a ton that I'm grateful for. And I just remember, though, one of the things that unfortunately we don't have a lot of is a lot of expositional preaching and sort of deep Bible teaching, at least in the churches that I attended. And And one day, a few of my friends at this church, which was this little tiny church in Kansas City, Missouri, where I was practicing law, said, let's study a book of the Bible. So we studied 2 Peter. We got together, which is funny now, having, you know, studied 2 Peter and knowing how bizarre the Greek and all that sort of stuff is.
Right.
But man, we were bound and determined to try and make sense of this thing. And I think God lit something up in me at that point. And I was like, holy cow, I've never been exposed to the Word of God like this. You know, in classical Pentecostalism, they talk about having this sort of second work of grace, this baptism in the Holy Spirit. So now, while I don't hold to that, here's what I would say. If there was a second work of grace in my life, it was the opening of my eyes and a depth of meaning in simply studying and hearing the Word of God. It was like water hitting parched ground. I had never experienced like the love of God, the grace of God in that way. And that led then me to doing the same thing with the book of Titus. I started studying that with some same group of friends. And it was in Titus where Paul says to Titus, I left you in Crete to set in order what remains and appoint elders in every city. And then he begins to describe what an elder is. And I remember being halted by that. And it wasn't one of those moments where Paul described an elder and I'm thinking, oh, that's me. He's describing, it wasn't that.
Right.
It was, I want to be that. And I guess I'd say that's where the subjective witness of the Spirit sort of pointed in my life and said, I made you for this. This is what I want for you. And kind of lit that fire. And then that led to a whole series of, growing up the way I did, I had become suspicious of the God told me, I heard from God sort of thing. So I kind of said, okay, I sort of hear that, but I want to test that. And so I nerded out. I had this spreadsheet where I literally had the names of all these people, took to breakfast, lunch, dinner, coffee, whatever I could. So if like Jeff Metters was on there, I'd be like, okay, I put Jeff Metters on one line and then, you know, the date that I went out with you. And then I'd like, what did you say? I'd share like, hey, I think maybe this is what's happening. Yeah. So it was just kind of I wanted to look back on something and have something objective that I could hold on to. And then I went back after all that was done, after doing that about 50 times, and it was almost to a person, like, I feel like this is the Lord. I feel like this is God calling you. I think you should respond to this. I think you should do this. And so that led me to say yes, and, you know, chats with my wife. And, of course, there's a lot more to the story. But the Lord sort of, you know, moved me, and then that led me to Dallas Seminary, and that was such a wonderful experience for me because I'd never been taught the Bible intensively like that. I really, really needed seminary because I didn't grow up with that kind of teaching, and it was wonderful. I mean, to this day, I feel like I wish I could go to seminary. I wish I could be in a class all the time. I just love what they taught me and how they taught me while I was there. So I have a lot of fond memories and just a deep, profound gratitude for the way that they mentored me and trained me in those days.
Yeah, man. Well, then here we are now. You're at Foothill Church in Glendora, California. Yeah. And how and why did you and the church get involved with Acts 29?
There's really two parts of this story. I won't get into the sordid details, but the truth of the matter is, Jeff, I was rejected the first time I applied. This was I don't know, must have been back in like 2009 or so, maybe 2008. And I was interested because I'd, you know, been hearing a lot about it through Mars Hill and Driscoll and different things like that. And eventually, I filled out all the paperwork, went through everything, and had some guys come to my house. And I'll be honest with you, it was not a pleasant experience. one of the guys shushed my wife.
Oh,
I was like, yeah, we got done with that. And I'm like, if this doesn't work out, I'm actually okay with that.
Yeah.
It didn't work out. And so I was like, fine. We kept building the church, and working on it, and the Lord was gracious to us. And then a few years later, I was in a coaching relationship with Dave Kraft, and through that, Dave basically said, "Hey, I think you ought to give Acts 29 another try." You know, they're kind of Acts 29 2.0 now with yeah. Chandler and some of the things that are going on, and he really had wonderful things to say about it. And so I did. And so, you know, he put me in touch with Brian Howard, and Brian kind of walked me through a process and much, much different this time.
Yeah.
And it's been a joy, honestly. It's been, I consider it, I really, really love being a part of this tribe, this group. I'm grateful to the Lord that he's put us in touch. I think what it's did for me is it's really helped me to prioritize church planting. I believed in it all along, but I needed to be around some guys that had done it, because I didn't plant Foothill Church. Foothill Church is a replant. It's a revitalization effort. And so I really needed guys that were like, hey, this is how you do it. This is what you do. And then what can a church like ours do to make that happen? And so that's been a really wonderful part of being part of this group.
I love that so much. Then I love the emphasis that you bring up about church planting too, because I know, you know, serving as a pastor, for lead pastor for at least, you know, around 10 years, is that when you're engaged in missions, and especially like overseas missions, it's far too easy to just write the check and send the money and not be invested personally, not have any kind of sweat equity involved, not any kind of, you know, people involvement. And, you know, sometimes that's all we can do with those ministries. And that's perfect. And that's great. Hallelujah. We do need to send the money, and we do need to. But we could also add an element of, and this is what church planting provides, is we're involved. We're involved in the discipleship and the formation. There's investment relationally, emotionally, financially, spiritually. I mean, there's just so much stuff that happens in church planting. And so, man, I just love that about Acts 29, how we just keep putting in front of ourselves and our people that we are a church planting network, and we're a church planting church. And we want to see healthy churches, and we want to see healthy pastors. And that's one reason why we have cohorts now in Acts 29. And so, Chris, break down for listeners. Maybe they're like, I haven't heard of this, or I hope you've heard of this by now, or maybe you're an onlooker. You're not, you know, involved formally with Acts 29, but you're interested. So what are cohorts? Why are they so crucial for pastors, and maybe now more than ever?
Yeah, man, I tell you what, this is one of, I think, the biggest value-added pieces of Acts 29, and I'm thrilled that we're doing this. So a cohort is basically a group of 10 to 12 guys in similar-sized churches that meet together, you know, basically twice a year, once in the spring sometime, once in the fall. And it's really just a time of mutual learning and encouragement and sharing. I've just found that cohorts meet a need that really can't be met elsewhere. I go to conferences. I'm sure you do. Yeah. Listeners do. I love them. I love conferences. I love, you know, there's various ones that I want to be a regular at. They feed me. I enjoy them. But the truth of the matter is most conferences are going to feature guys. There's nothing wrong with this, but they're generally going to be guys that are, you know, very large church pastors or some national ministry or things like that. And it's kind of the sage from the stage. And I sit there and I take notes, and I'm ministered to by that. Cohorts, I guess you could say, are like micro conferences that are laser pointed to your specific need, right? Mm. A guy on the stage can't do that. But when I can sit around a table over the course of 2.5 days and I can chat with guys about what's going on in their churches, what's going on in mine, and sort of, you know, on the one hand, rejoice and be encouraged, and on the other hand, commiserate and cry together. Man, there's something profound about that, and they have been a source of incredible encouragement to me. I've probably made some of my best relationships within Acts 29 because of these cohorts. I'm not an extrovert, right? I'm kind of introverted, and so I'm not just making friends, picking up the phone, doing that sort of stuff all the time. These kind of force me into some of these relationships. These are guys I probably would have never known had it not been for a cohort, and I'm just super grateful to know these guys, meet them. Man, Acts 29 is filled with really smart people, and I need people who are smarter than me, and yet walking side by side with me, who are helping me think through some of the issues that I'm facing. And then I'd say they're probably going to say the same thing. So it's learning, it's support, it's relationship, it's encouragement, it's this sense right now in the midst of our culture, knowing we're not alone. Hey, I'm going through that too. Yeah, we had the same fight in my congregation over, you know, whatever it is. How do we handle that? And that kind of thing is just, I think, invaluable as leaders, for us to be able to have other leaders in our life that don't feel like, again, they're not the guy up on the stage we're all looking at. They're really right there close. I got their phone number. I can pick up the phone afterwards and call them and say, hey, flesh this out for me. You talked about this, or we were talking about that, and I didn't get a chance to kind of get to the meat of that. Help me. And that's where I think the beauty and the power of cohorts really lies, is how tailor-made they are to each individual pastor.
Yeah, that's so good, Chris. I love how you brought up that, you know, some of us are introverted. Some of us are highly extroverted. Everybody's different. There is no, you know, kind of mold for a pastor. And sometimes people think there is like a type of Acts 29 pastor. That's not true. We are all so different, have so many different giftings and personalities. And some guys are probably out there thinking, I've already got friendships with other pastors. I've got this kinds of stuff already. And for other guys, they're probably, man, I need this. It's going to pull me out, draw me in. But I think for even the guys like, oh, I already have those relationships, I'm good. Like, no. One uniqueness to the cohorts is, it's relational context, addressing needs and resources and training and how peer-to-peer ministry can help. But maybe just break down maybe what a weekend looks like, or just how you see all of this playing out in a cohort.
Yeah. So generally, you're gonna meet for dinner the first night, just hang out. So, you know, my cohort, that tends to be on a Monday, and we're going to hang out. We'll fly into town, wherever that is. We're going to eat dinner together the next day. We're going to spend the whole day together. And that's where we're kind of, hey, what's been happening the last 6 months? What do you see happening the next 6 months? And all of us sort of walking through and talking about that. That ends up being a time of ministry. Sometimes there's pain that's revealed. Sometimes there's things that we realize, we need God's help with that, and we'll pray for one another in that context. And there's a time of sharing, like what's going well, what's going well in your context, and where do you need help? What's a resource you could share with everybody? And I think Amazon probably, you know, sees an uptick of a few percent on those days, because it seems like everybody's got their phone out and like, I have 47 books I've got to buy at the end of that. But there's also a lot of really practical resources. Don't have anything to do with a book to buy. It's more just like, hey, we tried this and this has been working really well. Here's a resource I'd love to share with you guys. And then just talking about where we need help. Hey man, I'm how are you guys doing groups? What are you doing to engage people in overseas mission? How are you training church planters? There's 1,000 questions that we all are working our way through and trying to understand as leaders, and to have those guys and be able to look around the table like. You know, I've got a guy in my cohort who, you know, his church is planted at this point probably 20 to 30 churches. Wow. I'm like, man, if I want to talk about church planting and raising up church planters, I want to hear him. I want to what are you doing? Like, talk to me. Explain your process. So there's just so much, you know, Proverbs. There's wisdom in a multitude of counselors, and I feel like that's what happens. You are literally surrounded by a multitude of counselors helping you fight the battle better and go back into your context with some really good solid ideas and things to implement as you head back to your church. So they're always just incredibly encouraging to me, and I've been privileged to be a part of them for the last. I think I've been in my cohort for about 5 years now, and it's been amazing. So,
man, yeah, what a blessing to have these intentional, longstanding friendships and relationships where you can really confide and get counsel from each other. That's so helpful. And I think what's also so helpful about this is that it's not just geographic cohorts; that it is, you know, X29 organizes the cohorts according to church developmental stage. And so I guess maybe give us some breakdown of what that looks like and how that really does benefit in the pastors involved.
Yeah, I think it's good. I look at, let's say, really, really large churches, and I would not put ourselves in that category. We're not a mega church. Nothing, again, that's no judgment. I'm just saying that's not who we are. So for me to go, let's say, and learn from a guy of a church of several thousand, I'm sure I'm going to learn something. For sure I will. Just like I would learn something from a church of 50. There's always something to learn. But there's something about being around guys that are roughly in the same spot. That could be because you just planted, or that could be because, you know, you've grown to whatever size that is, and you're now facing some of the same dynamics. You're facing the same dynamics in staff hires. You're in kind of groups and growing that. You're facing some of the same dynamics in facilities and needing to raise money and just all those kind of things that you find when you're with people that are in that same group. You're like, okay. And it goes back to even to what I said earlier. In some ways, you can commiserate with people that are also. I was just talking to a young couple today, and what a blessing it is for them to know that there are other young parents who are going through the same things there. Just merely that fact, right? Well, I think it's the same thing with a cohort. You're kind of looking around and going, I'm not the only one going through this.
Right.
I'm not the only one that's sort of wrestling through masks and vaccines and racial issues and all these things. I'm not the only one that's you know, practically trying to figure out how to raise money for a staff member. I'm not the only one who's trying to figure out facilities and letting that group then speak into that. So I think... it's a benefit to be around. Certainly, we want people who are much more experienced than we are, and probably want some guys who maybe are leading at a higher level. But we also just need our peers, and that's what I think is special about this. It's not just, hey, go make a cohort with the guy who's closest to you. That could be great. But it's sort of cross-pollinating from across geographic regions, and at the same time, getting you around guys that sort of can speak the same language you speak because they're in similar settings and in similar sizes. And it's amazing when you come together, you find out, oh wow, we really are wrestling through a lot of the same issues together, and walk away going, okay, I think I know how to tackle that because these guys have helped me.
Yeah, man, guys. Guys that are listening and your lead pastors in X29, and you are not connected to your cohort, Kristen, I just want to encourage you to get connected. If you don't know who you're with or whatever, reach out to your regional director and they can point you in the way you need to go. They can get you connected to make sure those things are getting set up or whatever you need to do. Or you can email me or just reach out to anybody at X29 and we can point you to the right direction where you need so you can benefit from this. You can be encouraged. You can be strengthened, not just in the immediacy, but for the long haul. Hopefully all the way to your, when you hand off the pulpit and you hand off the leadership to a young guy there in your old age. Well, Chris, you mentioned being a part of your cohort for, you know, around 5 years now. I just wonder, how has it encouraged you personally, just both as a pastor and just as a disciple of Christ?
Yeah, well, I think practically it's encouraged me to kind of stay in the fight. You know, it's good to just be around guys, and when you realize, okay, I'm not the only one. It sort of bolsters your confidence to go back in, even if you've had a rough 6 months, and stick with it. They've helped me practically in areas like training elders and, you know, coming away with ideas for groups or capital campaigns or how to raise money. And so there's a lot of real practical, tangible benefits to doing that. I think just as a believer, I'm just encouraged. I'm encouraged to hear what God is doing in other places, right? We can become so focused on what God, we feel like God is, and maybe sometimes when we're feeling sorry for ourselves, what God isn't doing among us, and then to go around and hear these other guys saying, man, here's what's happened in the last 6 months, and just walking away and go, God, you really are. Who was it? I don't know. Was it Eugene Peterson that said God works in 10,000 places? Maybe I'm getting that wrong. But you are, right? You are, and you're just at work, and it's such an encouragement to be a part of a group of guys that where, you know, God's making a difference in their context. I'm encouraged because guys are coming with humility. They're not coming to strut their stuff. Yeah. I think of the guys in my cohort, and I can't think of one that kind of walks in and goes, you know, this is mine to talk about. This is me being able to sort of coach everybody else. No, it's really just guys going, man, okay, here's what's going well, and praise God for that, and here's where I need help, and so guys, I'm all ears. That's just really encouraging to me as a believer to stay humble before the Lord. Boy, as you said, if you're listening to this, I just cannot commend you enough. If you're part of Acts 29, you're one of the pastors, that this would be something you give priority to. Like, pull aside, set aside the time on your calendar, because I know you'll walk away encouraged, and I know that your church is going to benefit just because you've been able to spend some time with leaders that are going to be, it's ironing, sharpening iron, and one man sharpening the countenance of another. And so I think my church, whether they know it or not, always feels the benefit of me being in a cohort.
Yeah, that's a good word. That's a really good word. Well, Chris, we end the Acts 29 podcast with these three final questions. And so, number one.
Yeah.
Great book you've read recently that you'd recommend. And I know you're a reader. You don't have to limit it to one. So if three, four, five pop up, feel free to let them
do
fly.
You know what, Jeff? Do a book podcast someday. Like, just talk about great books that people have read, because that really, that is always such a... So let me just say this. On the theological front, I am ashamed to admit to you that I read my first J.C. Ryle book this summer, and I was blown away. I read the book, for whatever reason, God in his mercy directed me to the book Holiness. I've seen, there's been threads on our Facebook, whatever that they call that, the workplace, and people like, hey, good books, whatever. And I've recommended, I'm leading a group of guys through it. And these are guys who are not theologically trained, and to a person, they're like, this book feels like it was written yesterday, and just a good challenge. I need to grow in holiness. And man, J.C. Ryle just sort of unpacks that through about 20 chapters, I think it is. And it's so, so good. And again, I sort of feel ashamed that I haven't read him before this. I don't know. If I'm going to go off on some other tangent, there's a few that I'm just like, I was just recommending to somebody the other day. I love Steve Martin. I grew up with Steve Martin.
Oh, yeah.
And if you've not read his biography, Born Standing Up, actually, he does it on Audible as well. I read it, paperback the first time, and then I listened to it again over the summer, and it was him reading it, so you kind of get what. And you know what? It's funny, of course, but it's really poignant. And there are some, he talks about his relationship with his father and the difficulties, and even knowing some Christian people and the way he interacted with them. So it's a really, it's short, but I don't know if that's one of those things that sometimes I need to get out of this, out of your sort of theological side, and like put it away and not be looking for sermon illustrations and et cetera, et cetera. Sometimes you just need a place to just read and enjoy. And I just, for me, that was one of those kind of just pure enjoyment books where I'm like, this is just fun to listen to and read.
Born Standing Up. I'm going to get it today on Audible.
Yeah.
I'm
going to
do that. Okay. What's your go-to order in a coffee shop? I imagine you're a big coffee guy just because you're in California. And so I figured that's like a requirement before you buy a house.
Dude,
or something.
Listen, let me tell you something. I'm 54 years old. My kids are the people you're thinking of. I am literally a black coffee and half guy. And I'm not even a part of this sort of, I'm probably going to get hate mail for this, but this sort of third wave coffee revolution. Everybody loves, you know, the citrus and different flavors. I'm like, just give me chocolate and caramel and like coffee. I want coffee and I want half and half. And when I go to any coffee shop, I'm like, just give me that. I might get crazy and order a cortado or, you know, didn't even know that even existed until a few years ago. But yeah, it's just, I mean, when I get up in the morning, it's some black coffee and half, and if you go to a coffee shop, black coffee and half and half.
As long as it's not Folgers, we're okay.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. No, don't do Folgers. But hey, I like Starbucks. So, and some people are like, oh, boo, you know, but I'm just not that picky with my coffee. So.
Yeah. You know, people can hate on Starbucks. I worked at Starbucks a long time ago, but here's the thing. They're doing pretty well.
Yeah.
So I think they got something figured out for people.
Yeah, they do. That's right. You're going to get all kinds of like responses to that.
So. Yeah, I'm a poser. I'm a poser. That's fine. Favorite verse and why?
So I think it has to be James 1:5. If anyone lacks wisdom, let him ask of God who gives generously and without reproach. And I think the reason why is because I probably pray that verse daily. Truly. I can't think of a verse that is more regurgitated in my life, in my prayer, in my leadership, in our staff meetings, in anything else, of just that sense that, Lord, like, I've never got this under control. I never really know what I'm doing. And the promise, I mean, that's just, I've told people, like, this is one of those passages that sort of, it's a guaranteed answered prayer. If anyone, let him ask. He'll give it generously without reproach. So I just, I think there's a lot of places. I love Romans 8. There's places I would go. But I think this one just ends up being almost a theme in the back of my life. God, please help. I need wisdom. I don't know how to handle this. I don't know what to do. And I'm praying that all the time. And I just feel like the Lord's been gracious to me through it. So,
Yeah, man, that's a great promise. And it just reminds me of, you know, Jesus in Matthew 7, ask, seek, and knock. If you know, how much more will our Father give good things to those who ask him? And this is definitely one of those good things that he wants to give us. Well, Chris, thank you so much for coming on the X29 podcast today.
Hey, just thrilled to be here, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Listeners, thank you for checking out this episode. And we would love for you to share this with people on your staff teams, people in your leadership, people in your churches. So share about it on your social media so they can listen and they can subscribe as well. And remember, brothers and sisters, let's keep planting churches to the ends of the earth.